Movie theaters are modern-day pulpits. Real-world theology exists to shed a light on the narratives that are shaping our culture and to remind viewers that entertainment is not mindless.
Welcome to Real World Theology, episode 94. On this episode of the podcast, we are talking about Batman versus Superman, Dawn of Justice. To help me talk about that, I bring in the two titans themselves, James Harleman from Cinemagogue and J.R. Forresteros from The Storymen, and honestly, probably every other podcast on the internet by now. So we're going to have a great discussion because Batman versus Superman is an age-old question that we may or may not actually get an answer to in this film. But what we do get is a messy Zack Snyder film that probably will surprise you in places, and it does give us plenty to talk about. So with that, make sure you guys are checking out realworldtheology.com. We have new reviews, top five lists, streaming recommendations, all kinds of really great things for you guys to check out during the week in between podcasts. Follow us on Facebook at Real World Theology, Twitter at Real World Theo. Subscribe to the podcast. Please rate and review this show, guys. If you enjoy it all, please review this show. Give us 5-star reviews. It helps bump our rankings. We really appreciate it. You can find us on Feedburner, Stitcher, iTunes, and tell your friends. You know, let's get more people involved in the conversation. In the meantime, we have a really great show for you. It's pretty long, but I think you're going to enjoy it. Here it is, episode 94, Batman v. Superman and Divisive Interpretations.
A similar situation to what you described, James, in the theater. I walked in, I was wearing my Batman shirt, but that's only because I own like 3 shirts. And so two of them are Batman shirts
sure.
and the other's a Captain America shirt. So, running the roulette, I was wearing a Batman shirt and noticed lots of people wearing Batman shirts. I saw 0 Superman shirts in a like 85% full theater.
Well, let's face it. Batman dress. Nobody is disputing Batman dresses better. But you know, I mean, you could argue, I mean, I could look at some of my favorite celebrities and I could say, you know, RuPaul dresses better than, but that doesn't mean he's better than, I mean, you know, Batman undeniably dresses better. Let's make no mistake. Far easier to get cool Bat merch than it is to get anything Superman related. I had to work hard to find a non-primary colored Superman shirt. So,
Well, and I think we could all agree easier to find Superman things than finding any female superhero, anything, right?
Yeah, true. Also, James, I think that now that Batman v Superman is out, you won't have hardly any problem finding non-primary colored Superman stuff, as Zack Snyder has successfully drained all the joy and life and hope and goodness out of Superman entirely. So it should all be grayscale from here on out.
Except for the beautiful joy he has soaring in, as shown in the Man of Steel, the best flying sequence they've ever had of Superman in anything.
That's true. There was like a 3-minute moment of goodness in both of these movies combined. That's true. I forgot about that.
Well, I mean, I would hope that we do not end up just talking about how much of a terrible director Zack Snyder is.
He's possible. A great cinematographer, though.
Yeah, I would never do that.
And actually, I was curious, James, are you going to do a write-up for Batman vs. Superman for Cinemagogue?
I will. And, you know, it'll probably be 2 parts. And okay. That gets into my thoughts of the film.
Okay. I don't need you to tell me like necessarily how it's going to unfold or how you're thinking of doing it. I was just wondering if we were going to get one. No matter how long we talk on this episode of the podcast, we're never going to get to everything that either of you, whether James or JR has already put in his review or what you're going to put in yours. So that's the beauty, just like a starting point for these conversations. But I guess I would say that did either of you really like this film? I know JR didn't. Well, I guess James, did you really like this film?
I take out the adjective really.
Okay, so you like this film.
I liked this film. I didn't love it, and I think I'm holding on to that like for probably the next 4 to 6 months.
Gotcha.
To be total to be totally honest, I didn't like this movie as much as I liked Avengers Age of Ultron. Mm-hmm. But a lot of my problems with this movie were very similar to problems I had with Avengers Age of Ultron.
Uh-huh. And I think that's completely fair. And you're not the only person to point that out. And the weirdness of, or the oddness maybe, of how similar those problems are, yet even though people disliked Age of Ultron, it wasn't getting a 29% on Rotten Tomatoes or whatever the other site is, the site that basically said it was getting the same kind of reviews as Green Lantern or Catwoman, you know?
But let's be fair now. Something I want to point out about Rotten Tomatoes. Rotten Tomatoes is usually pretty spot on when the critics' reviews are within 10% of the user reviews. Fact that there's a 40-point spread, I think, says something.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's what, actually, I think DC posted something on Facebook about that today, that they talked about how, I want to say it was either Snyder or, you know, Goyer or somebody like that was pointing out how, there's such a difference. Like, never has a movie made so much money. I mean, it gets made, over the weekend, Batman vs. Superman made like $170 million just domestically. I think it was like 400 and some worldwide. So, ridiculous amount of money. And yet, the critics think it's awful. Actually, I would say the critics made a story out of how much they tried to pan this movie before it came out.
How much they tried to pan it?
Well, I mean, like, so there is not liking a film, JR. All right? There's, you know, dear audience, I got to see this movie last week, and it was not very good. It did this. And then there's people writing these, like, poetic verses, some of the most creative critic writing I've ever seen, just to talk about how bad this movie is. It's like they wrote these reviews 3 months ago when they had an epiphany. Like, they woke up like in a cold sweat and said, that's the perfect tagline to how much I'm going to hate this movie. And they just wrote it down. And then when the movie came out, they just filled in a couple pieces and let that fly.
I honestly almost did that. When, after I saw Man of Steel, uh-huh, I had the massive problems with that movie that I had. And then when they announced Batman v Superman, of course, everyone in the world was like, JR, it's like going to be the greatest movie of all time. And my reaction was, well, not if you've seen Man of Steel. Like, if you've seen Man of Steel, you know that Zack Snyder fundamentally doesn't understand what a superhero is and doesn't have the moral imagination to tell a story with superheroes in it. So, no, like, it's actually going to be a train wreck, that a train crashes into a dumpster fire. Like, that's what it's going to be.
I almost
wrote a review and then and held it and then went to see the movie, and then I was gonna write like whatever my honest review of the movie was and just see how similar they were.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't do that because I'm lazy, but honestly, the only thing that would have been different is that I would have praised how much I enjoyed Batfleck.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only thing that I was pleasantly surprised about.
And okay.
Everything else completely conformed to my expectations.
Well, let me ask you both this then. I want to make a very clear distinction, because I don't think people who like this movie or think this movie is like really entertaining are dumb people. But I think there's a distinction between being able to like a movie and understanding that the movie's not very good. Like this is my Starship Troopers example. Like, I love Starship Troopers, but I realize that it's not a very good movie for lots of reasons. Now, it does enough to be good enough for me to like it. So I don't want to listen to just the critics on this. And I don't want to harp or have a whole episode about what the critics said about this movie, because I think there's enough here to talk about without just talking about it. But like, James, you said you like the film. Do you think it's a bad movie?
Well, let's qualify bad movie. Okay. I have it, and I thought about this coming into the show. My wife and I have literally in the summertime, we have attended 4 days of Wagner's Ring Cycle, and then through Saturday, and then Sunday we have gone to the Monroe Demolition Derby and Fireworks Show. And honestly, I think my wife, God bless her soul, this is one of the reasons I love her, is if we could put those together and have an aria sung by the fat lady right before the fireworks kick off and cars smash into each other, we would actually be totally fine with that. And so I don't mind one or the other or a blend, which is why, honestly, the 45-minute fight at the end of Man of Steel, for everybody who loves WWE that I don't understand, mm-hmm. if I can watch people in a ring have a fake fight that we know isn't going to have a significantly, you know, damaging or any real outcome for 45 minutes hitting each other with chairs, I can enjoy superheroes going at it and smashing each other from space and through cities. And that, I'm fine with that. Hmm. That fulfilled a childhood expectation growing up, always thinking that all my superhero fights were far too short. But there's a difference between, you know, watching a movie like Christopher Nolan's The Prestige and Fast and Furious 7.
Yep.
Absolutely. It's the difference between opera and the demo derby. And so, like, this is a demo derby movie, and yet it aspired to be The Passion of the Clark. And so the fact that that juxtaposition failed in some ways. I would say 15 years ago, when about all we had was one X-Men movie,
mm-hmm.
and, you know,
that was about it. Yeah.
That's about it. And the sort of Batman, and honestly, we would have been changing our shorts for how awesome this movie, we would have been glad of this movie 15 years ago. I think that the interesting thing is we've actually delivered some dynamic films from Winter Soldier to, you know, no matter what you think of the X films, various pieces. Mm-hmm. We have so much to choose from. And it's been done. So Nolan's Bat trilogy, there's been so much given to us. We can be much, much more discriminating.
Yeah.
And so there's a number of reasons why I even feel let down by this, why I reduce it to just kind of a basic, you know, I enjoyed myself. I enjoyed myself. I wanted a lot more out of the film. Honestly, when I think about most of my problems, though, most of my problems are the fact that things felt choppy, unexplained, mm-hmm. and disjointed. And I am still holding out a little bit of hope that not that it'll go to love, but it'll at least go up to, maybe I'll be able to see I really like it if I actually get that half hour back in the director's cut. We'll see.
Is it the glue that puts the rest of it together that they cut out?
Literally, things felt like great character moments, conversations, and connecting tissue just felt gone mm-hmm. in this. And I have to wonder if I'm going to blame Zack Snyder or the producers. I mean, not that I want to compare this movie to Blade Runner, but 1982, nobody thought much of Blade Runner. Now mm-hmm. it's considered one of the greatest films of all time. And you know, the producers made him hack things up, put a happy ending, and put in a bunch of crappy narration, and even Harrison Ford sounded bored doing it. Years later, we get a director's cut. It's up there on AFI's, you know, best films. I mean, mm-hmm. this is not going to wind up on anybody's list of best films, but it might become a more enjoyable experience if I actually get what feels like the gaping plot holes filled in with Zack Snyder's original cut. So we'll see.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I think I also like what you said about, or I think it's a great thing that people aren't really taking into account, which is if we did get this film 15 years ago and we didn't realize, you know, what we could do with Winter Soldier, or we could have genre superhero movies that were still solid, like Ant-Man, you know, like it's just a comedy, like it's okay to mm-hmm. to be really good at a genre, then we wouldn't realize what we were missing out on. Because I have a friend at work who, you know, he was like, Batman vs. Superman, 5 out of 5 stars. He's like, it blew my mind. I can't wait to see it again. And I was racking my brain. It's like, I understand how you could have liked it, but how could you think that this is like the best movie that you've ever seen in your life? And it hit me that he doesn't go to the theater. Like, he doesn't go see movies. He, mm-hmm. you know, he watches movies with his kids, and he gets out to see, you know, I don't necessarily want to call this an adult movie, but more of an adult movie very rarely. So he probably has not dove into lots of these other films, and he's a huge Superman fan. So, I mean, it seemed like it was right up his alley. I was like, this starts to make sense. Like, if you don't know what you could have, then maybe that's okay. Well, let me shift the question a little bit.
Can I disagree with both of you?
Well, I want to ask you this question,
okay?
Because I think it's going to give you the chance to answer the question that you want to.
Well, I wanted to dispute that this movie is fine if we've never seen another superhero movie.
Okay, go ahead.
Because we had Batman and Robin, We had X3. We had Spider-Man 3. Like, there are just such things as really, really terrible movies that happen to have superheroes in them.
Wait, 15 years ago we had these movies?
Yeah, I mean...
How old am I? Oh, my gosh.
How old? 2000, we just had the first X-Men film. I was going back to sort of... We would have had Batman and Robin for sure. This would have washed out Schumacher's... This would have washed the Schumacher taste out of my mouth.
And this is where I disagree with you, James. Like, for me, I understood why every character in the movie was doing things, mostly because the script had them say it out loud. you had characters who were literally saying, what I'm saying is, oh, okay, well, thanks. Yeah, because it's actually entirely impossible to understand your motivation from anything else in the story, except when the script tells you how to say what you're feeling. And that wasn't a problem for me. Like, I understood why people were doing the things they were doing. It was just stupid. Like, it was, if I could sum the entire movie up in one word that I got a hyphen in, it would be ham-fisted. Like, this movie was, and to use your example, it was a demolition derby that thought it was being an opera. And so it just ended up silly. I don't know. Go ahead, Mikey. Sorry.
No.
I just wanted to, before you guys change the trajectory, I wanted to say that a little bit.
Well, it's not that I feel that if maybe you had comic background, you could understand some of the transitions. And I have not read a lot of the stories that this was based on.
They wouldn't help.
But so I think there are things that you said, and I would have to go back and read your review, that I didn't even pick up in the film, and I didn't think anyone said specifically. And it makes me wonder, were you actually right? Or were you just assuming? But yeah.
Like
what?
Lex Luthor?
Yeah, lots of stuff about Lex Luthor.
He said it. He said it all.
Because he was mad at Superman.
He said, if there was a God, then my parents wouldn't have died and I wouldn't have grown up an orphan. So either God can't be all good or God can't be all powerful. And I'm going to prove to everyone you're not a God by making you kill Batman and televising it.
Maybe that's the part where I was sleeping.
It's possible.
Okay, well, so here's how I wanted to transition this. Would you say, does this film do Batman justice?
No.
Okay.
But it's still the best cinematic Batman we've had.
So, like, how can you say no and it still be the best? Flesh that out.
Well, I mean, first place in the loser's bracket, still a loser.
So, right now, James, to this podcast, you are like the Zack Snyder of positivity.
I mean, Jared's going to find himself in the minorities saying that there hasn't been a... I think there are a lot of Christopher Nolan fans and Dark Knight fans from 2008 that are going to probably disagree with that. And I loved this interpretation of Batman. I think it's a great groundbreaking for hopefully a continuance of increasingly good and increasingly better films. I love that we got the Marco Zorro. I'm glad it's probably in many ways some of the most beautiful little faithful notes to the most sort of classic iconic comic book one, except for that as well. Although some people are going to dispute, of course, since he killed people, although owning an old compendium of the original stories, he's blowing away people with his machine gun plane in the original comics. But there's been killing both before and after, even in the Dark Knight. I mean, in the Dark Knight, there's actually a line in Frank Miller's Dark Knight Returns where I think he's blowing, there's explosions all over the panel, and there's a little quote from Batman thinking, rubber bullets, honest. And it's so obviously BS because people, like, there's explosions and people flying all over the place. So, like, we've seen a Batman who uses lethal force. We've seen, and yet at the same time, that the flashback to the parents, there was even having sort of the burnt down manor, a lot of great notes. I love the idea of a retired Batman sort of coming back out. I mean, you could tie it in. I don't know if it's superior to Bale, but I think that they've given it to the right guy and established a decent tone. So,
yeah, I think I was curious how I was expecting him to play the recently Batmaned Batman, and instead,
go ahead.
Well, I was gonna say, and instead I got maybe, you know, another 5 to 10 years before he's like Kingdom Come Batman, you know, before he's like, he's like older Batman who's got to enlist like Robin to take up the mantle, or he's got bat machines doing his crime fighting for him. Like, I was surprised when Affleck was like, you know, I've been doing this for like 20 years. You know, I was like, oh man, like that's really quite the difference. Cause obviously in this Batman versus Superman DC universe, like Superman's still young, you know, Superman's still 25, 27. I don't know how old he's supposed to be. He can't be that old.
Sure.
So it's really interesting that they're setting up this age difference.
So here's why I will defend.
Okay.
Even against the Nolan, I'm a Nolan fan. Dark Knight is one of my top 5 favorite movies of all time. Here's why I will defend Batfleck against Balefleck, or Batbale, I guess.
Batbale.
Bailman.
Yeah, Bailman. because in the entire Dark Knight trilogy, we never get a Batman at the top of his game. Batman Begins, he's beginning, obviously. Dark Knight Rises, he's coming out of retirement. And in The Dark Knight, we still don't get the world's greatest detective. He does some kind of, like, BS detective stuff in there, but it's not real. Like, it's like, you know, bring, what is it, rebuilding a bullet and get a thumbprint off it. Like, give me a break. But even then, the Joker is always 8 steps ahead of him. Like, every time. There's never a moment. And that's the whole point of the movie, right? At the end of the movie, the Joker's like, oh, you thought this was the plan? Like, give me a break. Like, that's not the plan. I love...
Well, the same thing happens here, does it not?
Well, yeah, but that's going to be one of my problems with the movie. you have the world's greatest detective. I mean, we don't even actually really fully see him in the cowl for, like, what, an hour, hour and a half into the film? And he's detecting. Like, he is solving a crime. He's figuring out who this white Portuguese is. And he's, like, he's going out as Bruce Wayne undercover, like, all the kind of stuff, which is the best stuff in the Batman comics. Like, it's so cool when you see Batman solving crimes, not just punching people, right? And so I love that. I love that he's at the top of his game. Like, he's not making mistakes. He's careful. The whole fight with Superman is so carefully orchestrated. Like, every moment, every movement, like, you see this Batman who's got plans inside of plans inside of plans, and then contingency plans for those plans. That's the Batman I love. That's the Batman we've never had on screen. And I've given up ever seeing a Batman who doesn't kill. Because, again, I don't think that the filmmakers at DC right now, and probably just our culture in general, have the moral imagination to imagine that someone could be heroic without killing bad guys. Like, I don't think that we can imagine big enough as a culture to imagine that kind of a universe. So I've given it up. And I've said, okay, my Batman's going to kill people. Whatever. Like, given that they're terrible storytellers, like, what's the best we can hope for?
Marvel's Daredevil does a nice job.
Yeah. And he does kill people, right, in the first part of the first season. And then he has to, like, deal with that. And there's, like, consequences and, like, emotional consequences. And then all of season 2 is, like, that line he's trying to walk. Yeah. So, again, though, if we're comparing who's the better storytellers, Marvel's winning by a landslide at this point.
But I would say, I mean, except for that, and maybe what they'll do, well, the Spider-Man films obviously did that. I don't think... Neither side. I mean, the X-Men films definitely kill. Captain America kills. Iron Man kills.
In those comics now, they do. Like, that's, they kind of don't really apologize for it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not really fundamental to their characters, the way it has become. I mean, in the DC universe, not too many years ago, there was an entire plot line where Wonder Woman executes Maxwell Lord, and it ends up getting broadcast on like international television, and Batman and Superman basically kick her out of the Justice League. And they like, and that's a whole thing. It's like, it's so well understood that this is the rule. Like, it's the line. And Wonder Woman's whole thing is like, that's your rule. It's not my rule. Like, there's no way. Like, she has her lasso of truth around Maxwell Lord, and she says, how can I stop you from doing this again? And he says, kill me. And she's like, all right. She snaps his neck. Like, boom, done. Like, he was wearing the lasso of truth. Like, he told her the truth. And so, but that's like, it's a whole thing. Like, there was like, that's so well known, and it's so deeply embedded in who these characters are in this universe, that like, that drove the plot of one of their major event comics. And yeah, there are exceptions where these guys kill. But I mean, again, any of the comic writers. Like, I follow all these guys on Twitter, and they're all, like, when Man of Steel came out, they're still arguing about it. That movie's been out for ages. And they say, like, yeah, bad writers use these guys to kill. But, like, mm-hmm. anyone will tell you, if you have Batman in a story and Batman kills someone, it's a bad Batman story. If you have Superman in a story and Superman kills someone, it's a bad Superman story. Because the whole point of those characters is that they win by playing by their rules. And it's a super arbitrary line. The Batman can't kill people, but he can paralyze people from the neck down. Whatever. Sure. Right? But it's an established in-continuity line that for some reason the filmmakers, and it just drives me crazy, right? In The Dark Knight, the whole point of The Dark Knight is that he won't kill the Joker. And then he kills Two-Face at the end. And then The Dark Knight Rises, he's just, like, murdering everybody. He's like, yeah, well, I guess it doesn't matter anymore, right? So, I mean, it's just, like, it's just so sloppy. And I think it speaks to a lack of imagination on the story, for the storytellers, people who are telling these stories.
Well, I'll say this, and maybe, James, you can speak to it a little bit. I did see that there was controversy over Batman killing. And there being an interpretation of Batman killing didn't really bother me. Because it's like, kind of, I think kind of where you're going, JR, is like, I expect it, right? Like, what else did I expect from a big blockbuster DC Universe comic that's coming out, like, in our current time?
In a universe where they freaking turn Superman into an executioner. Yeah, if Superman's, like, going to be murdering people, yeah, definitely Batman is.
So that's not shocking to me. You know, I can agree with it or disagree with it, but it's not going to shock me either way. I'm going to be like, well, he didn't? Awesome. He did. Yeah, kind of expected. But what really, really stood out to me in this film, and I guess we haven't really spoiled a whole lot right yet, but I will remind people that if this is your first time listening to the show, we are going to spoil this entire movie. So if you're going to watch this movie, go see it and then come back.
Oh, come on, wait. JR's got to say, we can't spoil it any more than Zack Snyder did.
Oh!
See, I just had to give you that one, man.
I feel like we're already working as a team. We're already finishing each other's sandwiches.
There were lots of things about this movie I liked. There were lots of individual moments. And like I said, I think Batfleck is I cannot wait for a standalone Batfleck movie. I'll be the first one in line.
Well, okay. So like I said, the thing that really struck me about Batman, and it was something that I thought about when I'm thinking, did they do Batman justice? It's, like I said, killing, take it or leave it. But it's that he devises killing in this movie. Like, he's dispensing final justice to a thug or someone who's, like, trying to shoot him in the back of his head. I get it. But when he is not immediately threatened and doesn't have to, like, ninja somebody in the face to save his own life, he's sitting around in the Batcave with an underutilized Alfred. And he's basically speaking in these absolutes, saying, if there's a 1% chance Superman could be bad, then there's basically a 100% chance that he has to die. And I think, like, I was like, that's morally problematic. That's, you know, theologically problematic. That's ideologically problematic. Like, there's a lot that's practically problematic. So you're saying, like, is it just because he's Superman? Or do you have a problem with anybody who has a 1% chance of being evil? Did you see, James, did you see, like, that take Batman to the next level of...
Well, see, that takes me to a place where I would actually make a pretty prime distinction. To me, there's a big difference between... I mean, we have police officers, we have military men.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're lethal force when necessary, I have no problem with. Premeditated execution?
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, like, sure, execute Maxwell Lord, or I haven't read that story. We talked about Wonder Woman. But there's a big difference between Man of Steel, where he's gone to every length to try to avoid death, and then because he's inexperienced and he seems forced into it, although we could say a smarter man could have figured a way out. Versus engineering someone's death because a preemptive strike. That they made Batman 10 times more of a killer. They mm-hmm. made him. They made, and not to mention even basically making him Kraven the Hunter. he's like, my family was hunters.
Yeah, what is that about?
Hunt me some Superman. I was just like, wow. He just needs his leopard skin. I mean, I was...
That basically sounded like him trying to justify why, like, the drunk guy at your work gets drunk on St. Paddy's Day. He's like, my great-great-great uncle's aunt's sister's brother's roommates was part Irish, and so I'm drinking.
I owe it to my family.
Again, something I find fascinating, and here's one place of difference where I'm enjoying these, and that is... I don't think, I could be wrong, I don't think DC, I know everybody likes to say they're trying to rush to catch up with Marvel. I think that's it's different to me on two counts. One, I mean, nobody knew Iron Man was until 2008, except me and like five other C-lister lover comic book fans, right? I mean, ratio-wise, everybody on the planet knows who Batman and Superman is. Mm-hmm. Everybody, like, I didn't grow up watching a Batman cartoon, then a Superman cartoon, then an Aquaman cartoon. I watched the Super Friends. I got them all from the beginning. So the idea that we're just rolling straight to Justice League makes perfect sense to me. We could pick up one-offs from whatever we want to. But also, they seem to have made some arbitrary decision. I don't think they're trying to give us the distilled traditional forms of these characters. I think they're fully embracing something DC's done for years called Elseworlds, where they have, you know, Superman was raised in Russia. Like Superman was, you know, raised by Russian parents. They have all Superman, you know, Batman's back in the time of Jack the Ripper. It's Gotham by gaslight. Like you have these different things. Here we have a universe where a 20-year-old, you know, 20-year veteran quasi-retired Batman is coming back to the game. At the same time, Superman's just been introduced to the world. Wonder Woman's origin looks to be very different. Aquaman looks extraordinarily different. It seems like they are giving us a truly different multiverse version of these characters, which has an unpredictability factor to it, which I'm actually enjoying. Is this my favorite version of Lex? Absolutely not. But have I seen 20 variations of the corporate businessman Clancy Brown or Rosenbaum Smallville? Have I seen that so many times? Yes. Is there something about stepping into a universe where everything is off by a certain degree that is different than what the Marvel franchise? You can stop any of these movies, as much as I have loved most of them, stop them anywhere in the middle and say, James, where do you think it's going next? And I can tell you exactly where it's going next. There were things, I guess I never stopped to think in all of my years that they both had the same mom's name. Like just weird things like that, curveballs they throw at us in this movie, although half the stuff doesn't work. The unpredictability was actually kind of interesting.
Hmm. Actually, I was going to ask if they legitimately were the same name or they just changed it.
No, they are. Yeah, they are. There was nothing in this movie that surprised me for like 1 second. Like I was just like, oh yeah, now Superman dies. Oh, I'm so surprised because they did Doomsday. Wow. Okay. I mean, the one amazing moment would have been Wonder Woman, but they spoiled that in the trailers.
I fall to watching trailers.
But
yeah, I was gonna say that is kind of true. If they would have just let that be a complete surprise,
but they couldn't because otherwise, like more people wouldn't have come to see this movie, right? Mm. Like they had to show you Wonder Woman.
All right, so let's flip the script, and I'll ask you the same question. Well, not the same question, but a slightly different version of the same question, which is, James, does this movie do Superman justice?
Well, I think we could argue that they've changed Batman and even in more dramatic ways than they changed Superman. Mm-hmm. As a guy who loved Man of Steel, and I don't think this movie, I didn't like this movie as much as Man of Steel, but for definitely, I don't think that, I mean, Lex Luthor was not in any way, either the actor or the character, near as passionate or interesting as Michael Shannon in the first of this kind mm-hmm. of new universe. Cavill had a lot more room to breathe and be. One of my favorite moments of the film was actually there were a couple nice interactions with he and Amy Adams as Clark, which were nice and interesting, and I think they had more chemistry here than they had in the Man of Steel, but I only got like 3 minutes of it because it feels like it was chopped up a bit. Mm-hmm. I think the best Superman parts, if I believe the rumors, much of Superman got left on the cutting room floor, so I'm wondering if we'll get some of that character interaction back. But we'll have to wait and see. I like his acting. I like it's a great Superman character, and I think, I mean, yes, he's trying to figure out, as I've read in many comics, Smallville, all sorts of different things. You've got the farm boy who's also an alien trying to figure out what role of savior he has. I liked that concept that the film was playing with. I think that as a pastor and theologian, sometimes I've read some folks saying that it's overbearing and it's all. I've heard a lot of Christians saying that. I'm wondering what would happen to have a conversation. I haven't talked to anyone who has no interest in these things to know, you know, between Lex's rants about God and the idea of Superman as savior. I wonder what just the average guy who isn't always doing film and theology in his head. Most times I talk to people about these concepts in movies and they're like, wow, I didn't even realize that was there.
Yeah.
If I think this one was overbearing and a little too on the nose or in your face, I'm wondering if to the average guy, if maybe they noticed it for once. I don't know.
Well, a lot of it's on the nose, and we will definitely have to address that, because, I mean, Lex, to me, you've described him as, you know, not your favorite actor, you know, persona or interpretation in Batman vs. Superman. But he was infuriating to me because I understand him as someone who is incredibly smart. And it just annoyed me that he had a simplistic problem of evil. And not that the problem of evil in and of itself is simplistic, but it felt like his view seemed like someone who hadn't given a lot of thought. Because the linchpin quote that he uses, the one that JR has already mentioned, I feel like I haven't heard anyone honestly argue that as and that's an absolute and that's the way it is since I was having these type of conversations my freshman year of college. If God is all powerful, then God cannot be all good. And if God is all good, then he cannot be all powerful. I feel like the conversation of evil has moved past that. So it would be interesting to hear someone maybe who doesn't have those conversations kind of hear that and see what they would take. But it gave me two questions to really think about. One, why do we have Lex arguing this point at all? And two, how do you respond to it? Either in a film where you have someone who's not actually a god, or how do you respond to that person, James, that comes up and says, hey, I hear you do the film and theology thing. You should do, it's the same reason everyone wants us to do Matrix, right? Because they see the Matrix and they're like, oh, I couldn't miss it in that one. So when that person comes up to you, James, how do you respond to Lex going off about things like this?
Well, it did. It seemed like one of those high school, college conversations. So it felt strange coming from someone that I would have expected. I mean, they almost did. This was a very childish Lex Luthor. And mm-hmm. so it could make for some fun. It could make for some fun youth group conversation. If there's a crowd that's enjoying the movie, well, we could certainly take that. And we could say, okay, well, what does it mean? Right. How do we deal with the problem of evil? Where do we deal with the origin of sin? Say, you know what, if some great conversations come out of that, the more power to this movie, I guess it has some impact on a certain set of folks. But at the same time, there is a degree. I mean, theologians have been trying to address this succinctly for, several thousand years.
Yeah, a little while.
And so there's a certain amount of mystery. I felt like that was a cover. I don't know if I really felt like Lex was mad at God or not in the movie. I came away thinking that he was just more of a person who realized when a person like Superman exists in the world, which is more of the classic DC interpretation. I thought the God talk was just him being lofty and using misdirection in that sense of he's actually just upset that, I mean, he has all this knowledge, but ultimately at some degree he has education and wealth, but lacks power and ability to impact the world and feels very frustrated by that. Hmm. Whereas you have this character like Superman who in Lex's view has in one sense hasn't earned it, although he's a spoiled inheritor himself. So He hasn't really earned it either. So he's this impotent, powerless child. So there wasn't a lot to like about the Lex character. I appreciate in the new my relative impressions of the new 52 and things that DC has done in their comic. He's a little bit more of the kooky younger scientist character. I think now in the comics redid him a little bit several years ago, stripped away some of the interpretations I grew up with in the 80s. I mean, before the 80s, he wasn't a CEO. He did LexCorp and a lot of these things weren't around for the. Like, he was a goofy red-haired scientist way back in the first issue, so his first appearance. So I can't say it's totally unfaithful, but at the same time, it just felt wholly unsatisfactory. And I do think that, I enjoyed it. I thought Man of Steel had on-the-nose theological ideas, but here it just sounded like they gave him things to spout because they released it on Good Friday, Easter weekend. Yeah. they wanted to lower down Clark, in his cape, sort of lower him down off the not the cross, but where he dies. It all felt a little strange to me in that sense, where there's one step too far.
Hmm. Well, I'm curious because he did flip the painting was flipped up and flipped upside down by the end, which leads me to believe that he believed what he was saying a little more than.
Or is that just because Darkseid's coming with his parademons?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But how does he know that?
The problem
he seemed to know. I don't know. That is he having Bruce Wayne visions too? I don't know.
Well, I mean, you could say that it's when he learned all the Kryptonian technology, information, whatever, like that somehow drove him a little insane, maybe. Mm-hmm. The problem, though, is if Lex doesn't believe all the God talk, then he literally doesn't have any reason to do any of the things he's doing. Like, that is the only motivation the film gave him.
So he could technically have the motivation that James is wanting to kind of imply to him, but the movie does not really give us any.
Yeah, I mean, sure, if we want to start making up reasons for characters do things,
well,
sure.
It certainly makes more sense.
Right?
Yeah.
But, like, if we go with what the text of what the film gives us, and again, I think... I think that part of the reason that they played Luther a little insane is because they wanted him to seem like a megalomaniac. They wanted him to seem like obsessed with the God talk stuff. I think that was by design. I think it was so we would believe that he was like mad at God again, because they're so like there was never a more ham-fisted Jesus allegory outside of the Chronicles of Narnia than Man of Steel until this movie came along. James, I'm with you, man. Like, I talk to people that don't watch film critically, and I was like, yeah, I thought the Jesus imagery in Man of Steel was pretty heavy-handed, and they were like, what Jesus imagery? Like, well, when he's in space and his dad says you can save them all, and he's holding his hands out like he's on a cross, and they're like, do you think that was on purpose? Yeah. Yeah, like, it was definitely on purpose. Like,
or maybe when they were shooting that scene in the church, they accidentally caught Jesus in the stained glass right over.
Right. Yeah, or like, again, in this movie, when they're taking his body down off the thing, it's like, oh, they just sort of accidentally reenacted every famous Renaissance wood carving and painting of Jesus's removal from the cross. Yeah, yeah. Accidentally. It's just like happy coincidence, right? Like, no, all of these things are super on purpose. Now, again... just because people don't see that, I don't think makes it any less ham-fisted. But, yeah, I think that's... Go ahead.
And here's where I'll pause right there, and we'll say, if we go back to our demo derby opera analogy, which I thought I'd throw in earlier, going to some opera, dude, talk about ham-fisted, all right? Somebody's dying. Somebody's dying. They sing for 15 minutes about it.
True.
So I'm not opposed to ham-fisted. What's disappointing to me is they wanted to do those things. Like, if you go back and watch Watchmen, right? Who watches The Watchmen?
Mm-hmm. Very few people, apparently.
There are a lot of – you could say a lot of it is ham-fisted in its own way as well. But it was more artful. I think what disappointed me about this movie is the fights. From an artistic visual point of view, this felt like Zack Snyder at his lowest. I mean, I think there was more artful movement in the Owl movie than there was in the fight scenes in this movie, Guardians of Ga'ul, which, yes, I own. But there is an art, and even if you think the movies are vapid and or ham-fisted or whatever it is, from 300 to all these, he has always had a very smooth style that at least, you know, you could say for all the plebes, it is nice to look at, although maybe you could say it's hollow. This actually felt also choppy. Even the fights felt choppy. His typical employment of art was off. So even that's why I say it didn't, where it wanted to be artful in its, in his ham-fisted way, if you will, whether ham-fisted is good or bad, where it wanted to be, it felt out of sync with the directing style of the rest of the movie. And it actually worked against it. Again, all the things that undermined really making it cohere for me.
Yeah, I agree. I was really surprised at how poorly I was able to follow the action sequences. Even like Batman's sort of like car chase, you know, several times during that, I was like, wait, where did that car come from? Or how many cars are involved in this in total? And like, when did that happen? And that's not you. Like you said, that's one thing you can always say about Snyder is he makes really good looking movies. And he's usually visually a very careful director. So I was pretty surprised that I had so many issues with some of the action direction.
Did anybody else get the sense, even to the way the music was put together, that it all just felt rushed?
You mean with the Mad Max kind of chase music?
Well, they employed parts from the Zimmer score, Man of Steel, but then they had this strange operatic style music, and then the Junkie XL stuff. I remember walking out of the movie Kick-Ass and thinking so many things about that movie, including the music selections, never should have come together and actually worked. It was so eclectic, but yet somehow it was this beautiful gelling of and this felt like the complete opposite, because I'm a very music makes or breaks a movie for me. So take John Williams out of Star Wars.
Oh, yeah.
We would never have a franchise. We may never have a franchise that we have now. I mean, like there's. Score is God in some ways for me.
Man of Steel, the score created emotions for me that the film did not earn.
Like, true. And I'd go all the way back to 77 and say that's true of many elements of Star Wars. Williams made that the movie that Lucas couldn't. And this movie just felt it felt like I was watching a work print with placed music of different sorts. Like that was my feeling.
Like someone now, trying to make like a YouTube mashup.
Let me ask a question. So speaking of score, this film had a Batman score, a Superman score, and a Wonder Woman score. And then in the final fight, they kind of wove them all together. And obviously, like that wasn't like a 10 out of 10 stick the landing, right?
Yeah.
Would you prefer that, ambitious and well, but not perfectly executed? Or would you prefer what they do in the Marvel movies where all of the scores are like super generic, even in the Avengers movie?
I think that, well, again, if we just go to John Williams, like there's a way to pick out, I mean, Princess Leia's theme, Yoda's theme, Luke's theme, there's discernible themes for characters. I think that could be done. I'm a little bit worried if Wonder Woman's theme is, I'm wondering how we take, I was a big lover of Wonder Woman's theme reminded me of Batman Beyond. I don't know if anybody ever watched that cartoon.
Oh yeah,
you got the electric guitars in there, and it's like, well, wait a minute, isn't her film going to take place in World War One? Am I going to have this weird Junkie XL music set again? I don't know. That doesn't bode well for me.
Yeah.
Well, so I would say that the toughest part about music for me is I love it when it's done well. But I would rather not remember it than remember it poorly. And so I never really have anything negative to say about the Marvel music. Because I feel like it almost never gets in the way. Now, the opposite side of that is it never becomes great, right? So
right.
You never have that thing that really rises above. But, I mean, as we've already said, the source material is pretty good. So it's not like two strikes. It's just not taking away from something that's good. And this one, you know, I didn't think the source material was already that great. But then when they tried to do what they did, I noticed the music and not in a great way. It wasn't like the kicking of, you know, Star Wars, like the opening credits of Star Wars. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't the opening thing of Superman or Indiana Jones. Like, it wasn't something that pumped me up when I heard it. I was just
like, Dark Knight and The Dark Knight Rises both had incredible scores.
Yeah. So like there's this thing that it does to me, but this one made me say, oh, they're playing music in the background of this fight. That's weird. For whatever reason, which I don't think I should feel.
And that operatic music with choral voices even kicked in. My wife Kat pointed out several times. It felt like it was kicking in with this in moments that didn't earn it.
Right. Well, gosh, that's like the tagline for this movie, right?
Well, but like it's not even that, like, the music was there, and it wasn't even something dynamic happening on the screen. Like that, like it, the script didn't have it, but the music was there. It's just so yeah. There were several disjointed pieces, and I can't. I wonder if it was it overproduction, was somebody pushed. It felt unfinished, or whether it was unfinished or hack edited at the last minute. It just felt unpolished in a way I wasn't expecting.
I want to transition a little bit before we get too long in the tooth of this episode. So. I know it's going to be longer anyway, so I just don't want it to be too long.
Just like this movie.
Yeah, just like this movie. So one of the reasons we do Batman vs. Superman is because no matter what the Rotten Tomatoes score is, like I said, it's 170 million domestic, you know, like 400 some million worldwide. James, as you pointed out, people know Batman and Superman. They've known Batman and Superman for a long time. So this movie is going to get seen by nearly everybody at least once. And with that, we're going to have those people that come to people like you, James, or people like you, JR, or myself, and they say, hey, I know you watch these movies, and I want to talk to you about it. And I think I kind of almost want to form a response or kind of have a thought out there that we can kind of leave people with. And I really am curious, like JR, if someone comes to you, like the guy that doesn't notice it except for when he watches The Matrix, he watches Batman vs. Superman and he sees Lex talking about the problem of evil. And he's like, yeah, what about that, JR? How do you answer that? What is the deal with the problem of evil? You know, Batman versus Superman, you know, Lex Luthor's, I think he's kind of right on this, you know? Like, how can God be good?
Yeah, so and again, this is what the film does very well, albeit very obviously, right? The Christian theological response to the problem of evil is the God who suffers with creation. So how do you prove, and this is again also I think partly where the movie kind of falls apart, but just let it be a movie, right? Mm-hmm. The problem with Superman is he's not all good, nor is he all powerful. So to force him to embody the problem of theodicy is like weird even by Lex Luthor's standards. There was never a single character in either Man of Steel or Batman v Superman who's like, I was an atheist and then Superman and now I believe in God. Like, no one, that wasn't anywhere, right? It was more just like people had hope that things could be better tomorrow than they were today because there's Superman. I don't know. Again, this is so much better developed in the comics for Lex Luthor, for other kinds of villains like him who want, you know, we don't need superhumans to help us, all that kind of stuff that the film just completely ignores. But all of that to say, purely from the theological perspective, when you have a God, we have a world that is not good and a God who is good and also all powerful, that does create a real problem. And the answer that the Christian canon avails to us is that we have a God who enters into the brokenness of creation, who gives up his divine privileges and takes the form of a slave and offers himself up to death for and with that creation, who bears the wages of that creation's sin on his own shoulders and thereby makes a path into life for that creation. To quote Rob Bell, God is the one who says, me too. You know, the cross is the ultimate way that we can look at God and God hear God say, me too. Any betrayal, any hurt, any pain, that we suffer natural evils, diseases, injustices, acts of violence or terror. Gosh, you know, we could talk about, you know, we're recording this today after Easter, and there was that horrible attack in Pakistan, right? By where Islamic terrorists bombed an Easter egg hunt full of Christians, killed mostly women and children, right? And the cross is where God bears the weight of terror, even, right? Where God takes the terror of an empire on his own shoulders and can say, then with this creation, me too. I know and I suffer with you. And because Friday was not the end, but in fact, Sunday came and Christ was raised from the dead, God proves that God brings life even in the face of death. And I'm going to go out on a limb and assume we haven't seen the last of Superman either. And so we're going to get that nice kind of resurrection story somehow, you know, in this universe as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually, I think it's been a prevailing idea. Like I said, I typically don't have people coming up to me and saying like how or well, like proposing this problem of evil as an absolute as we get it in the film. But I do have people honestly asking, and I think it's a great question because it is hard to wrap your mind around. You know, I don't even fully understand it because ultimately I'm not God. You know, you guys aren't God. And so we don't have the answer for every single thing. But I love the image of God as a father. A lot because as a recent father, I see having to do things that my, you know, that my son does not like, you know, and being like, trust me, this is for a bigger good that you can't understand. And that's not, you know, that's not in and of itself its own answer, because JR, I think I'm just trying to add something to the thing that you just said, which I think was pretty complete. But it does give you a different perspective when you realize that this isn't all we have. Because it reminds me of the question that Joel Mayward posts in his review of this movie, because he says he's not really sure what the film's conclusion is, because on one hand, it seems that the film believes that the world is broken and it needs a savior. But at the same time, it also argues that people have good inside them and they can probably save themselves if kind of they're just good enough. And since it's Batman who basically espouses both of these views, I'm kind of left wondering
if you want to put given where we are in the franchise, not knowing how Superman's going to come back to life, right? If you want to put a theological category on it, what we're seeing in this film is what's called moral influence theory of atonement. So it's how does Jesus's death make humanity right with God? That's the question atonement askers. How are we made right with God? And one particular strand of theology is called moral influence theory. And moral influence theory says basically Christ, by being perfect and sinless, shows us what a good life looks like and also shows us the consequences of what living that life in a broken world looks like, which is a cross. And Christ's example enables us to follow his example and imitate him. And so you have Superman, who throughout the entire movie is ambivalent about whether or not he even should care about humanity, decides to, at the end, because Ghost Dad number two or number one, depending on how you count, tells him that all you need is love. And then he decides to sacrifice himself. And after, at his graveside, Batman and Wonder Woman are talking, and Batman says, I was wrong. I made a mistake. I'm going to like do this in his honor. Right. And so Batman's character is rescued and elevated explicitly, specifically by Superman's example of self-sacrifice. So that is how that would fit into theological categories. Again, obviously most Orthodox Christians, moral influence theory is a helpful category, but it's not sufficient. Because it doesn't take seriously the reality of human brokenness and our own inability to save ourselves. Whereas if you just go with moral influence, again, it's like what Batman didn't need to undergo any sort of material or spiritual transformation. He just needed to like see that he was wrong and then decide to be right. Right. And so that's where moral influence theory, like for, again, most Christians, doesn't go far enough. But that's what the film is doing, at least at this point. Maybe when Superman comes back to life, we'll see that he, in fact, died for the sins of humanity. We'll see. We don't know.
And I would say growing up in a certain strain of Christianity that sometimes we go too far the other way and we talk as if man were utterly depraved instead of totally depraved. And like the idea that obviously I'm not going to argue all we need is that moral influence.
Right. Right.
But the idea from the first film, the ideas they're playing at is that, all right, we're not totally depraved. Can something change us? Can something give something to us? Or can something restore the fact that we were intended to be light. We were intended to be lights on a hill. We were intended to be a little Justice League, right? We're intended to be these things. And can something bring us to that place where we're refreshed and actually can be the instruments that we were intended to be? And the movie is... Right, we don't have a real God. We don't have we don't yet have a resurrection, but we have rising dirt from the grave. But just for that hint of a second, but we have it's grasping at those straws, and it's, you know what? But I'm not going to blame Snyder or even DC or even comic books for doing that. They're using much lesser ideas. They're never going to get it right. Like The Matrix or anything. It's a, well, I could take this and run in a bunch of different directions. So it's grabbing at those ideas.
Or I think what this film does is just takes them and throws them up in the air and sees if anyone likes them.
I don't disagree. I think I would fire back at someone. I mean, I think I'd want to undermine Lex's argument and even his motivations. I know... And maybe I just, I'm still wrestling with the interpretation there.
Yeah.
I've talked with a lot of people who love to try to throw out, they've never quite been as succinct as Lex is with his God, the problem of evil. Usually they're a lot more rambling and reaching. But a lot of times people are complaining about God and complaining, they're acting like they're mad at God. When the reality is, I think God is, why is there the problem of evil? Why isn't God overcoming evil? Well, I said, all of us, we're going to the movies because we love to see we generally, especially in these types of movies, superheroes, etc., we like to see good overcome evil through, and the method by which that occurs is through narrative. It's like, I'm upset that I'm in act two. Like, what's the problem of evil? Well, God is actually working out an amazing story of redemption. Mm-hmm. And that's happening within the context of narrative. I'm frustrated because I really want Act 3 to be here. I want Sunday to be here. I want those things to be here, and they're not here. So I'm wondering why we're in the crucible and we're still climbing up Mount Doom in my life and the life of my friends, dealing with sickness and all these things. And I want to write the script differently. And that is Lex's problem. I mean, Lex's problem isn't that he's mad at God. Lex's problem is that he wants to be God. And for all of the social network he's created with LexCorp, and Lex Zuckerberg, that's just what he felt like to me. But for all of that he's created, for everything that he has, he's still powerless to really impact anything. And that's his point of frustration. He is not the controller of the story. He's not God. And Superman becomes an object of hate because Superman's not God either, but I guess he's the closest thing that he can take out his frustration on. And so that's what we do. My question is, like, when we get upset at the existence of suffering where we're at, because we actually think we could write or come to a culmination or bring the story to a close better or sooner than God. And we're not patient and wait on him. And that's really ultimately all that we're left with. Even with the joy and understanding that we have of Christ as Christians, there is still patient endurance and expectation. And the minute we think we can do better than that, we become Lex. So we don't like to admit our own state of dependence and need. And Lex is someone who's in societally so close to looking like a human devoid of dependence or need that's what's really being illustrated. He can pretend he's mad about mom and dad, but I think he's just upset at his own impotence.
Yeah. So like most Bible stories, the average person would be fighting, like, am I Batman or Superman, when in reality we're all Lex?
Well, and again, gosh, like, you can take the dichotomy too, right? Of you have the alien who comes to humanity, and then you have the humans who have to live in the midst of tragedy. And they should have, done such a better job of comparing Bruce and Lex. Here are two billionaire geniuses who both are orphans and have their entire lives shaped by that tragedy. Like, that should have been the text of this film. How these two men end up dealing with the alien differently. And because they completely murdered Jonathan Kent's character in Man of Steel, they could have even brought Superman in as the guy who had the power to save his dad and chose not to. Whereas these other two didn't have the power to save their parents. Right. And so, I mean, there's so much they could have done to really get at what made these characters who they are and why that pits them against each other, which is what The Dark Knight Returns was all about and why they fought. And they just didn't do it. It was just like, wouldn't it be cool if they fought? It was like a 3-year-old playing with action figures. And it's like, it's banging them together because it's fun, not because there's any reason or purpose to it. And that for me was why the movie didn't work.
Well, and that's why I lower it to like instead of love, because you're absolutely right. It's just the classic verses that seems like it's written for kids. But to be honest, throughout the years of all the Marvel, DC, Valiant, whatever comic books where you get any crossover book where the two heroes fight books. But where they fight before they team up.
Right.
That's
right.
That, like, Batman versus Superman is usually what we've gotten. Rare has been the time throughout comic book history where there's been a truly, genuinely, excellently orchestrated reason for conflict between two of these heroes. So and as a kid, I used to love those because, yeah, I just wanted to see them mix it up. Then it's like, oh, I'm sorry, I broke your toy, and now we're friends, and now we'll go fight the bad guy. It's sad that that's all. I'm bummed that's all this movie gave us. I mean, it's, you know, like, we pre-funked by watching Freddy versus Jason and Alien versus Predator. You know, like, there's a place for those, but I wanted more than the typical confusion hero fight team up bad guy. Mm-hmm. And I got the 2-star instead of the 4-star meal. You know,
James, I would say that it made more sense why Freddy and Jason fought than Batman.
Well, actually,
I have a soft spot for that film, so, you know, you're not gonna find me arguing.
I mean, honestly, listen, y'all, that's not a good movie. We'll all admit that. It's a fun movie, but the way they brought those two monsters into the same universe was honestly very creative, and it set the film up really well, much better than Batman v Superman.
Well, actually, so that's part of the problem, and I can give one of my come on moments away. Just the idea that it's not just Batman versus Superman, but one of my narrative, you know, film, novel, one of my story pet peeves is basing the entire conflict of your story. Even this happens all the time in sitcoms. Around a conflict that could have been resolved with a 30-second or less conversation.
Like every CW show ever?
Yes. So, I mean, that's the problem with, I think you're on the same page with me on this one, James, based on some of your posts. The problem I have with wanting to like The Flash and Arrow and stuff like that is I care about where the narrative is going, but I hate that I keep having to be paused because people won't have... Like I said, 30-second conversations with each other, and so it gets dragged out for episodes or multi-episodes, and that's very CW-esque. But like I said, most television sitcoms are this way. Most family dramas are this way. You know, oh, I'm a dopey husband. I can't tell my wife that I forgot to pick up milk from the grocery store, so here's a long, complex like lie that I'm going to tell for 23 minutes, and it's going to be so hilarious. And I'm like, that's not funny. Like, that's lazy. And I feel like they got, like, people wanted to see Batman. I didn't care about people. I wanted to see Batman and Superman have a good reason to go at it. The same reason I want, you know, Iron Man and Cap to have a really strong ideological reason to have a disagreement. And I did not get that. I did not get a real, honest to goodness reason that couldn't have been solved with a 30-second conversation between grown, smart, thoughtful adults. That would have not resolved that entire 15-minute fight. So I say that again to transition to our come on moments.
Mikey, we should probably actually observe that it was not a 30-second conversation. It was a one sentence.
Yeah. And then it was just ignored.
Yeah, no, it wasn't ignored. That ended the fight.
When Superman
said, "Save Martha," and then Batman's like, "That's my mom's name," and Lois is like, "That's his mom's name," then the fight's over.
I just love this, like, this one man monologue that I just got, or one man stage show.
One man show. Batman v Superman v Lois.
That's right. That's why I knew Batman wasn't going to let him finish, because as soon as Superman lands, he's like, "Hey, let me explain something." He's like, "I'm not going to let you explain it." I don't know anything. He's like Stephen Hawking Batman voice or whatever.
Let's be fair. Superman did try to explain it. I'm going to give my boy some points there.
Yeah. I mean, like, very briefly, after he had basically wrecked the Batmobile and told him never to do it again. So Batman kind of had a reason not to. It's like in Jessica Jones, you know, you don't want to let Kilgrave speak, right? You never let him, give him a chance to speak. But it's still, he could have written him a letter. He could have sent him a text. There's lots of ways this could have been resolved. Like I said, we've arrived at that time in the show where we're already going to go long. So I want to give us a chance, because this might take a minute, to talk about the things that we may not have specifically enjoyed about this film. Just like I said, just a hunch. So, James, since you liked this film the most of the three of us on a bar graph, what were either one or some of your moments that you just said, okay, come on?
Well, I think we find ourselves in a culture where it's hot or cold, it's like or dislike. You know, I'm so glad Facebook has given us more emoticons so we can have, you know, more than two responses to everything. Maybe it'll help. I don't know. But as I take it down from four stars, I wanted it to be a phenomenal movie. Instead, I just got a party movie, and that works out to a couple of the typical things I expect. The last fight with Doomsday is kind of, like, feels to me like the Incredible Hulk fight with the Abomination. Mm-hmm. It suddenly becomes very CGI, whereas I know there was a lot of CGI, but the mixture of practical effects and various pieces in Man of Steel, I thought Snyder did well, much better. So again, the gelling of various pieces, whether it's the music or the visuals, just felt like it was probably his lowest, to be honest. And that was disappointing. Everybody's got to have, you know, their best film, their worst film, etc. Whether you like them, all of them, or hate all of them. Mm-hmm. So that was disappointing. I wanted more of. I think the moments we got with Cavill and Superman were interesting. I liked the conversation. I liked his dream sequence. Seemed a little more coherent than Bruce's. So I liked the conversation with Dad. I liked the little intimate. I liked the when he comes home to Lois at the apartment. There were some nice little personal moments with Superman. Whereas I felt, I'll agree with what was said earlier. Alfred, man, Irons has a lot of potential. And kind of, again, it felt like it was wasted. So mm-hmm. It felt like really all we got was a greatest hits album, literally greatest hits of Superman and Batman punching each other. And that was disappointing. I wanted more of the notes that we've been able to see in superhero films now, where there's those moments. There was no great moment. Like, I enjoy Age of Ultron for the mess that it was. I loved the scene between Tony and Cap around the firewood. I loved Hawkeye in a few moments with his wife. Mm-hmm. There were some of those moments, and there wasn't enough of those to ground and give this the feeling of reality that it really needed. So it wound up feeling like a cartoon, and not even a Paul Dini cartoon at best. So I'm not upset that they went a different way with Lex, but I would have liked to have heard his speech. I would have liked to have heard more to get a sense of who he was versus the cliche spouting.
Mm. What speech did you want to hear? I mean, you just wanted a better speech.
Well, he gets up at the party and they cut away from it.
But they come back to it, and then he just kind of fumbles through it and stops.
Yeah, I got the feeling in that and many other places in the movie that there were more to those pieces that, for whatever reason, they just chopped. And maybe I'm wrong. We'll see when the 3-hour version comes out. Mm-hmm. We'll see where I'm right and wrong with what was just poorly cut for a theatrical screening time. I blame the movie theaters, but we'll see if I'm dead wrong on a lot of things. But I feel like it would, if we could have got 3 or 4 well-written minutes with each of the other characters, Lois and Clark on the terrace outside the apartment. There's this weird line she says, like, I'm not sure I can be with you. I'm not sure I understand that. Like 2 more lines. Maybe I would understand the emotions they're experiencing. So we'll see. Everyone just felt not shallow, but like I wasn't understanding them. And so there was a lack of understanding. And that probably was my most significant frustration with the film. And I think that's some of what you were saying, too. The motivations were suspect. And to me, it felt like maybe they were there, but somebody hacked out the scene.
All right. And JR?
My come on moments? Well, I mean, there were many. But I will say, the biggest two, and they're kind of the same one. I hated the Flash. When we get his little appearance at the end of Bruce's vision of this alternate future, which is Injustice: Gods Among Us, the video game / Superman Red Sun universe. And then he comes in and he's like, Bruce, it's Lois. Don't let him kill or don't with, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then he's like, oh, am I too soon? And then he disappears. I was like, oh, if that's the Flash, I'm super going to hate the Flash. Like, he looks terrible. Everything. I hated everything about him, especially given that Grant Gustin does such a good job on the CW. Just abominable. And then, you know, they did this big pump up about how Cyborg and Aquaman and the Flash are all in Justice League and have these great cameos. Nope, JK, it's security camera footage. And I was like, when Wonder Woman stops in the middle of everything to open Bruce's email, and then we just get like a whole scene of her rivetingly checking email, and it's just video clips. I was like, you're messing with me, right? These are not the Justice League cameos. Like, right? Oh, no, that's it. Okay.
Was anyone else waiting for Aquaman to bring the staff back?
No one. It was inside a building, Mikey.
I didn't know where the thing went. You didn't know where it went. Aquaman can go where this water.
You thought it was a well in a building that went into the ocean.
They're like fighting like in the docks, man.
Okay.
See, it's so weird to me because everybody's complaining about how it's so dumb that they're rushing everybody in so quick. I guess I appreciated that it was much less than cameos would have. Everybody seemed to think it was going to be lame that they were forcing them all into this movie. I think I came away with the alternate. I think I came away glad there was less of them. I don't know. That's weird. That's different.
The
email scene wasn't riveting. I'm not making a case for that either.
It's like, I'm not saying no.
Well, okay. No, I guess the way it felt was like, this is a scene that only exists to set up the Justice League. So if you're going to have that scene, freaking give me the Justice League. Like, don't give me security camera footage of the Justice League. I was super irritated by that.
And I don't think you're alone.
So that was probably my biggest come on moment. I mean, there were a few others, but I mean, that was by far I was the most irritated by that.
Well, so. I tried to make an itemized list so a bulleted list so I could go through them pretty quickly.
Do it.
So I could get as many as possible. For whatever reason, it really bothered me that I had to sit and watch Ben Affleck do a tire workout. Cause I was like, you're fighting Superman. Like, keep lifting weights, bro. Whatever. Like your muscles aren't winning this fight. But you know, there's something to be said about it.
Mikey, he wasn't working out to fight Superman. That's just what he does.
That's what he does.
Yeah.
I am by no means prudish but for some reason I was like, did we need this Amy Adams, like, almost like nude, like flashy bathtub scene?
I think Mallrats has explained very capably why that's a bad idea.
Yeah, it has, in general, but just, I understand the complications of them being together at all, but I'm just confused why, like, that was the way we needed to see them together. Like, I don't know. I was like,
oh, I'll tell you my other come on moment.
Okay.
Jimmy Olsen's cameo.
Was there one?
Yeah. None of us knew it, right? None of us knew that Jimmy Olsen had a cameo. Zack Snyder, no lie, went on record just to make sure we knew that that camera guy who got shot at the beginning of the movie, that was Jimmy Olsen, and he wanted to include him because he thought it'd be fun.
The CIA guy?
No, the camera guy. Yeah. Like, that's Jimmy Olsen.
Oh.
Yeah, but he's shot.
He said he was in the CIA.
He's credited in the credits, and Zack Snyder went on record as saying that was his Jimmy Olsen cameo because he thought it'd be fun to include him by murdering him. Zack Snyder doesn't know what fun is, which again explains these movies. But
Jenny didn't seem that broken up about it later.
Yeah. Gosh. Oh, that's just, I mean, like, now I can't even bullet point anymore. Now I'm just shaking my head. Anyway, so I didn't like any of the dream sequences, and I don't know if it's because I didn't see that they had a lot of point or because I think the directing was bad enough that they didn't coherently weave into the narrative, the larger narrative, which goes back to the larger point of everything being kind of disjointed and subplots that didn't go anywhere. I already said that the fact that the promise of the premise could have been avoided altogether with a 30-second conversation, something that has been pointed out by many people, I think JR included, that Superman's got super selective hearing.
Super selective.
Yeah, super plot hole inducing selective. And I want to give Sam Robinson from Real Gospel a lot of credit for coining the term Bayhem. For how Snyder, you know, usually ends the last 30 to 45 minutes of his movies. So, in general, just watching them fight the cave troll at the end was Bayhem at its finest. So,
yeah, go ahead.
No, that's all I had.
Well, I have to say, this isn't really in my things I really liked, but I appreciated that. The doomsday that we get is it really is the DCU doomsday, because after the death of Superman storyline, they give you Doomsday's backstory, and that basically when you kill him, he always comes back and he's always impervious to whatever killed him the last time. And so you saw that, like, when Superman, like, smashes him into the ground, he gets, like, the spikes and stuff. And then when Wonder Woman cuts his arm off, like, he just gets this big, like, that was all very kind of like a nice nod to the comics. Mm. Like, of who they made Doomsday to be after the death of Superman storyline. But
power-wise, that makes sense. I figured a lot of people would be angry that it's, you know, Lexod, though. I mean, like, that they it's somehow made, and Doomsday being Kryptonian, which again, I felt like I didn't really understand again, a half explained piece. I'm wondering, you know, you actually helped me realize something else. He knows Darkseid's coming because there's a tiny throwaway line about the fact that they have information on hundreds of thousands of worlds. And you're right, Lex probably has, you know, downloaded that into his addled brain. And that's probably where they're going with that. But again, so quickly flashed in the movie as to be incoherent.
Yeah.
Well, we transition to the bright note that we leave this wonderful episode on, which is our favorite moments from this wonderful, thought-provoking film. James, what were your favorite parts of this, or Batman vs. Superman, Dawn of Justice?
Ooh. You know, I've seen a dozen, you know, how many times have I seen the death of the parents scene? But it pleased me to see it done the most faithfully to the comics it's ever been done. So as the film began, I was just like, all right, I don't need to see this again, but this is actually beautifully captured and the most faithful it's ever been captured, kind of, as far as Bruce goes. So setting up Bruce and the scenes with him at his house down below with Alfred, all those character moments. I enjoyed the Cavill Adams moments that we got, and even Batman's dream sequence seems superfluous. The fact that he echoes Dad's words with his sort of reminiscing of Dad's and then his thoughts toward Lois, his sequence seems a little more poignant than a fake Justice League setup. Mm-hmm. And it was really the character moments of the two of them. And I will agree with most people, the setup of Wonder Woman. I'm looking forward to the World War One flick. I'm looking forward to her movie. I think she's well cast, a nice, what her obvious working out and just her sly facial acting, really actually nuanced in a way I wasn't expecting. So really looking forward to Wonder Woman. And other than that.
James, can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Who do you think that Jonathan Kent character in Batman v Superman is? Because it clearly can't be the same dad who told him to let all of those school kids die in Man of Steel. So do you think it's like an imposter dad who actually likes Superman and wants what's best for him?
You know,
I said that was not an honest 5 minutes to change his clothes. Right. I think that's a grossly misunderstood reasoning of Pa Kent, which I think they did beautifully in the first film. So I think it's totally holds up.
I agree that Man of Steel totally misunderstood Pa Kent. Thank you. Like, I've been saying that.
No.
I feel like, JR, you're picking the wrong fight. Let's go over to CinemaGog and...
Go over to CinemaGog and read 10 Reasons Pa Kent Was Right.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I will, and then I'll disagree.
You should, in the comments, and that way James can reply.
He argues that maybe, I mean, I serve a risen savior who waited 30 years to start doing anything. So he could have been like, healing people and could have healed people and didn't and took time
could
to
he
solitude.
Have?
I don't know. So the great question. But that
right? We know that like Superman could have because he did. And then he got in trouble for it because his dad told him to let kids die.
Well, isn't that what we get in Apocrypha or whatever?
Yeah. You know, every time here's something that's a whole superhero comic book thing though, right? Anytime any superhero takes the time even to change his clothes in a phone booth or in a closet like Spider-Man, and somebody gets cacked by the Green Goblin or by Doomsday so that they can protect their identity and their loved ones, it's the same principle. Whether it's 5 minutes or 30 years, it's logistically the exact same principle. Every time I go into the closet to change and put on my mask and my leotards and somebody gets hurt or dies, that's somebody I could have prevented, but I put my identity and the protection of my loved ones ahead of the revelation of my powers and identity. So Paw is wrestling with how do I get my teenage son, who he probably hasn't shot with the shotgun to see just how invulnerable he is yet. You know, Dad is trying to sort out those complexities of how do I protect my wife and this teenage son who I really don't know what the extent of his powers are yet. And so, you know, maybe there are times where you don't act and for the greater
maybe
good.
Maybe there are times you let kids die. Yeah.
Like, or maybe think, there are times where, because code breaking in World War II, man, we let whole cities got bombed because we didn't reveal that we had the codes. Like there are times where, there are casualties because greater people can be saved later. That's what Dad is wrestling with. And the maybe he says doesn't apply to the kids. It applies to himself. He's being prophetic.
It does apply to the kids, right? But and also to himself, sure.
He puts his money where his mouth is. He's willing to be the one that the maybe actually applies to.
Yeah, but it didn't apply. That's the problem. It didn't have to apply. Like, they've established, like, Superman's power set is that he's faster than a speeding bullet. So he could easily have saved his dad. Like, it was just bad. One of the things that makes Superman super is that he never lets kids die, ever, for any reason. Like,
unless, like James says, he's changing his costume and he doesn't get there fast enough.
Right. Well, now we're getting into how you problematize Superman on a global scale, right? Like,
Right. I mean, if he's on a date with Lois Lane, surely somebody is being molested somewhere on the planet with a super hearing. So if he does anything, he's not saving somebody like that. Yeah. Right. I mean, it gets into that crazy. And I'm not sure this movie has given us the extent of his powers. How Can he do the Brandon Routh thing where he goes up into the stratosphere and hears every single thing going on the planet? Or
he can apparently hear Lois getting threatened from in Africa when he's allegedly, we're assuming, in Metropolis at the Daily Planet. He can in the midst of fighting Doomsday, he can hear her banging on a rock underwater, at least like probably what, 10 miles away. But he can't find his mom's heartbeat in the same location.
And this is why BVS falls through.
Well, I was going to say, if it's all symbolic anyhow, I think that we can all agree that if, you know, it's supposed to be representative of Christ, who did have to, you know, who didn't start his ministry for 30 years, then he couldn't really be good, because if he was all powerful, then he wouldn't let kids die at all. So he's obviously not all powerful, because he can't be.
Oh, why did he raise Lazarus from the dead, but not his buddy John the Baptist? Let's him get beheaded. I mean, all those great questions.
Logistically, James, putting a head back on is much more difficult.
That's true.
I mean, we know in the incarnation, Christ is not all powerful. He's not all knowing. Like we know these things about him. Mark tells us he was not able to do miracles in Nazareth because they didn't believe. When the disciples ask him when the end comes, he says he doesn't know, only the Father in heaven knows. In John, he says he doesn't do anything except what he sees the Father do. Like, we know that Christ is limited in his human form. So, I mean, yeah, like that's, I guess it's less problematic in that sense.
Well, so might Teenage Clark.
Yeah, again, my problem is not that Teenage Clark has moral quandaries. My problem is that Pa Kent, this is the problem with Man of Steel in general. Superman is not a character who is human who learns to be better than human. He is superhuman. Like, that is, if you want a story about a human who learns to be super, you have Batman to tell that story. Or Deadpool, even, I would suggest. Or Peter Parker. Like, you have comic book characters, you have contemporary myths that lend themselves to that. The whole point of a character like a Captain America or a Superman is that they descend from above and they are ideals to which we aspire. And from the beginning of time, and by that I mean 1938, Superman has been where he got his morality is from Ma and Pa Kent. And so to undermine that, so that you have this Superman who doesn't have a moral center that he has to learn after he murders someone, that undermines who this character is. You're trying to tell a Batman story using Superman, and that's not what Superman's for. It's like you're trying to use a screwdriver to do the job of a hammer, and you have hammers. Use a hammer.
See, I don't know. I think there's something to be said for the fact that if we're telling the type of tale that's more messianic, Jesus grew in wisdom and in stature. Like, there, we don't fully understand how that worked, because he seems to be doing some cool stuff as a kid at the temple, but yet there was this idea where he would have to learn. And I would say then, man, can you imagine being Joseph trying to work out all those pieces? Like, I like the fact that Paul wasn't a morality Pez dispenser, but he actually had to, like, he says a qualified maybe at one point to his son. What dad hasn't had some moral stumbles, right? I mean, like, that's like
around letting children die, not very many that I know.
See, I don't,
again, should I save that cat from crossing the street and getting hit by the car? I don't know, maybe you might have gotten hit by the car. That's a tough one. It's a cat. An entire busload of school children, that's a no-brainer for like any reasonable person.
I don't know. Most of us aren't raising somebody who seems quasi-god. I haven't had to face that. Like,
yeah, I mean, that's my point. That's my point, right? Like, never before in the history of storytelling has Pa Kent had to ask whether or not it's right to save a busload of school children. Like, that's like such an easy, obvious answer. And for Zack Snyder to say, yeah, but it's really a hard question. No, it's not. You always save a busload of school children. Like, always. Like, that's what you do. When you're right there in the moment, staring you in the face, like you always choose to save lives. That's who Superman is. That's who he's always been. He's done that, and it's got him trouble in the comics before, because he does immediately the right thing. In Man of Steel, he like saves Lois from a dictator, and everyone's all mad. It's so clear that they don't have any idea who Superman is or how he functions or what he does as a symbol.
No, they totally got him because he did save the busload of kids. It was dad that was having them. It was all too human dad having the wrestle with it.
But right, and so there. then what we get is a Superman who has no moral imagination, because the one time he did something good, his dad said, "Don't do that anymore, son. You should let people die." And then in Batman v Superman, his mom says, "Clark, be good, help them, do the right thing, or don't. I don't actually care. I just want you to be happy. So like, it doesn't matter what you do as long as you feel good."
I think that's a misquote.
No, that's exactly what she said.
And Dad says, "Maybe.
Do it or don't.
Dad,
I don't care."
Let's go all the way back to Man of Steel. Dad says maybe in size, but then shows him where he comes from and says, "You know what? You have another father. He has a reason and purpose for you. It's important that gets figured out." Like, Dad didn't have all the answers, but he also wasn't the one qualified maybe is not the whole of the is not the whole of his speech, and that's where I felt that like, that's in the trailer. He says maybe, and that's all. It seemed like that's all anybody heard. Like, Dad actually said a lot more than that in Man of Steel. He was obviously working through and had been working through a massive wall board of information. I mean, he had the wall of weird up down in the basement. And yeah, I found him more complex than that. Or I think what we figured out is I grew up a sociopath and I had to learn these behaviors, and you naturally knew to save the busload of kids. That's what we figured out. We figured out that you have more moral imagination from birth than I did.
I think the beauty is, and I'm not really just trying to be a peacemaker here.
Yeah.
Is that I would be interested in both of those stories if told well. Because I don't think, I think they can, much like you can take the source material and make a good story from it, without having to be 100% accurate. I think you can take those moral quandaries and you can either make him all good from the beginning, or you can make him being influenced by someone who's working it out. And both those can make a good story. I think my problem with both Man of Steel and Batman vs Superman is that neither one of them, it doesn't pick one of those trajectories and stick with it. It tries to straddle the line, and doesn't seem to understand as much as we've gleaned from what we wanted it to understand, which is, I feel like is me trying to be unnecessarily complicated in explaining it. But it's much like when we get something out of a film because we have background or we have passion about a character. We want there to be more than meets the eye when it comes to a movie that
doesn't.
Speaking
of bad movies.
Yeah.
Now you're bringing Transformers in.
Exactly.
This.
So, you know, we want there to be more when something doesn't live up to the myth or the story, the narrative that we've come to appreciate, because it does have depth and meaning. So like I said, I don't say all this just to be a peacemaker. I might say it just a little bit because this is going to be an exceptionally long episode that I think is full of great content that I know everyone's going to be super glad they've listened to. because I don't even know where I stand on it, because I see what JR, I see what you're saying, and James, reading your like 10 reasons why, you know, Pa Kent was right, actually changed how I saw Pa Kent. I still don't 100% agree with it, but like, or agree with what his character did, but, I can see how it's more nuanced than it appeared on first viewing. So,
well, I'm having my own crisis on Infinite DC Earths with some of this too, because I'm coming to agree with both of you more in that I feel like BVS was definitely a step, even if we differ more on Man of Steel, this is a step in the wrong direction. I think we can all agree, except for there's a couple things in the movie, there's pieces in the movie mm-hmm. that if I think they could rectify and move in a better direction. But I mean, I think we all can say we were dissatisfied in more of a definite, agreeable way mm-hmm. on this film. I mean, if I might say like, or party movie, then you say don't like, but well, we all agree it wasn't great.
Yeah. Well, which is what one of the first questions, you know, is it quantifiably a bad movie? Can you like a bad movie? Things like that. And you mentioned these pieces. I think the last thing we were in the middle of structurally was our favorite moments. And James, I think you went. JR, did you say some of your favorite moments?
No. So again, that warehouse fight scene with Batman where he saves Martha too, mm-hmm. is the Batman I've been waiting to see.
Gotcha.
The Batman fighting like 15 guys at once is actually, I think they said 24, right? all of it. Like it was so spot on. And it was again, for the most part, a great example of a Batman who goes right up to the line of killing and doesn't, like most of those guys. I think he kills a couple of them in there. but again, I've given up.
Like, yeah,
I've
given up.
Right. So, I'll take it. And then my all time favorite moment in the whole movie, which James already said, is when Doomsday slams Wonder Woman to the ground and she smiles like, oh, this is a real fight. Like, I just came to help out, but like, we're gonna really do this. And she's excited. Mm-hmm. I was like, yep, that's Wonder Woman. That's Wonder Woman. And the two characters who are going to work the best in this Snyderverse are Wonder Woman and Batman, Suicide Squad. Those are like, those kinds are going to be good. Flash cannot exist in this universe. I don't think Superman is going to do well in this universe. Though again, obviously James disagrees with me. Green Lantern might, I guess. We'll have to see, like, if the insane dark cancer that is in charge of Earth extends to the entire universe in the Green Lantern Corps movie or not. But Hal Jordan could kind of function in this kind of darker universe. But this no jokes thing is not going to fly with Green Lantern or the Flash. Like, they're both super quippy. We'll have to see how we do that.
Mm. Well, I think all my moments were taken. I was going to say the Batman saving Martha Kent was probably, I was like, man, you know, again, as we've said, I'd given up him doing it the non-killing way. So once I embraced that whole fight scene, although it was filmed well, I could follow it well, and it was fun to watch.
And the conversation right before that, right, where he's like, you go get Doomsday, I'll save your mom. And Superman's about, he's like, no. And Batman's like, she's not going to die tonight. I was like, yes, yes, this is it. Oh, yeah. Like this. And then that moment in the fight where you look down and Doomsday is caught by Wonder Woman's lasso and he can't break it. Like, we've seen how strong he is and he can't break Wonder Woman's lasso. And then Batman fires the grenade of kryptonite at him. And then Superman comes. Like, I was like, yes, this moment, like, how can you get this? It's like the beginning of Amazing Spider-Man 2. It's like, you clearly know what a Spider-Man movie is supposed to be. How come you can't just do this for an hour and a half? Like, I was like, you guys figured it out. Like, this is what the Trinity is supposed to do in the DCU. Like, how come you can't just do this for 2.5 hours? Like, I don't understand. So,
isn't it so symbolic that he just can't break the lasso of truth, because truth is just unbreakable, you know? You just can't.
Well,
blah, 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 blah.
It's because the guy who created Wonder Woman also invented the lie detector, and he was super into bondage and S&M.
That sounds awesome.
Whoopsie. Yeah.
That took a turn.
No, seriously, if you want to read The Secret History of Wonder Woman, it's a phenomenal book written by a Harvard professor, and it goes into the creator and his whole crazy, like, jacked up sex life, and not like in an inappropriate, explicit way. And then just how all of that informed Wonder Woman and how she kind of became like this weird feminist icon in a very like weird time. It's a really good book.
And yet at the same time tied up on the cover of almost every issue.
Right. Right. Well, they go, that's part of it. Like it's an
yeah. Incredibly
fascinating book. Incredibly fascinating book.
Well, I will see if I can't find a link to put that in the show notes as well.
Jill LaPore is the woman, the author's name. She's incredible.
I think I'm going to go out on a limb here. And I feel like we've covered final thoughts just because, because we're like almost 2 hours into this. So we've covered final thoughts. And by final thoughts, I mean the things that are going to get further conversations started. So with that, we're going to start to wind down. And like I said, I just, everything, unlike Batman versus Superman, this conversation was everything that I wanted it to be. So
JRV James.
Yeah, JRV James. Right. Do not pick a fight with that guy.
James has an iron grip. I get it now. I see it. I didn't see it before.
Yeah. I mean, you just go up there. Wait, so you don't have the same, like, your mothers don't have the same name, right? Like, that's not like
my thing. Mother's Linda? Name is Carrie.
Okay.
No!
Yay!
This fight's not over then!
I have a friend named Linda.
All right. Well, James, you do lots of awesome stuff around the internet. And how can people find you or find the things that you do?
Oh, well, you can find me at cinemagog.com, and I'll be working on my own review for the film, which was just as mixed as many others. And JR and I actually agree more than we think on a lot of those points.
That doesn't make a good conversation if you all agree. So
yeah, and you can my book Cinemagog is on Amazon.com. You can find that there and give it a read if you like.
And JR, how can people conversate or bother you?
I blog and podcast at NorvalRogers.com. That's Shaggy from Scooby-Doo's real name. So you can just Google that if you can't figure out how to spell Norval. I have several podcasts that deal with everything from horror films to pop culture and theology to I have a Wesleyan feminist podcast. And so you can check all those out. And then I blog like once a month, basically, anymore, because most of my content's podcasting. I'm also on Real World Theology once a month-ish. A little less than that.
Fairly regularly. I mean, I have both of you on as much as I can. Both on you as much as I can.
I am slave to the Fissile engine.
Yay! It's a very powerful engine that picks up buildings and slams them back to the ground in a very efficient way to destroy the Earth. Probably the most efficient way to destroy anything.
That's the way you roll.
Yeah, consummate rings. That's what I believe in. Rings of Destruction. And if you want to find out more about those Rings of Destruction, you can find me through at Fizzification on Twitter, and just be at realworldtheology.com. You'll find lots of things that I'm involved in, especially this podcast, and lots of notes for it. So thank you so much, JR. Thank you so much, James, for being excellent guests, as always. And please, guys, follow them on social media. Follow their work around the web. You will not be wasting your time. Hey, thank you for listening to the show. It's obviously going to be a little bit longer show than we typically do, but I think the conversation was worth it. I think Batman vs. Superman, like, if the box office is already telling us anything, if the fact that we all already know who Batman and Superman are tells us anything, lots of people are going to see this film. Lots of people are going to be talking about it. It's not subtle. So thanks for taking the time to make this a part of that conversation. So until next episode, remember, like we always say, that story is powerful and entertainment is not mindless. Bye-bye.
This podcast has been a Real World Theology production. For more information, check out realworldtheology.com. And thanks for listening.
Now this is podcasting. Woo!
Boys, J.R. Forresteros meets James Harleman. I love it.
We've been on before together.
I know, yeah. But I can't. Okay. I can't do this. I can't do this Lex Luthor quote if you pretend you haven't.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. Because that's the reason Batman wins, right? It's because Superman doesn't come in with a kill shot like right out of the box.
Yeah.
Right. And they did a good job of believably setting that up where he's like, I need his help, even though he didn't, because he could have just listened with his super ears. But whatever. Right. Like, which of us has quite the grip? It's probably not me.
That's me. I'll take it.
It super bothered me that Lex outsmarts the world's greatest detective.
Yeah.
And
blackmails
Superman. It should have been the other way around. Right. Like, the whole point of Superman is that he's like normal intelligence. So a super genius like Lex can trick him and then, like, yeah, blackmail Batman or something, like manipulate Batman in a different way to where he knows what's going. Like, I don't know. I'm still waiting for Grant Morrison's Batman, who's the one that, like, when you think he's been tricked, nope, he actually knew it all along. And like, mm-hmm. It was like part of the plan. Like, yeah. He sprung the trap by springing the trap.
Yeah.
It's like I noticed in the theater when we went to see it. There were a lot more bat shirts there. I was one of only. It may have only been me wearing a Superman shirt, but really,
wow.
You only need one Superman. you need about 57 Batmans to hold up to that. So
yeah, I mean, if we learned anything from Batman versus Superman, it's that you definitely only need one Superman to lose a fight.
That's right.
Okay, you don't lose a fight. You just mentioned mommy's name in Batman caves. Come on.
Yeah.
And I was wearing my Batman watch and my Superman shirt, right? I mean, I go both ways. So
still not going to protect his ribs, like, from the shock of going through a wall.
Yeah, it doesn't have an inertial dampening field like the Enterprise does when it travels at warp speed.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah. So.
says the man with the inflatable Captain Kirk chair.
Yeah, that's the pot calling the kettle. You know, warp nacelles.
My mom died. Why did you say that name? Oh, I'm so sad all the time.
No parents.
Darkness.
Bad. I'll beat sociopathic homicidal maniac.